Welcome back to Issues Etc. Here in the second hour, Uwe Simonetto is our guest. He's an international journalist, and he joins us to talk about Pope Benedict's remarks about Islam made in his home country of Germany at the University of Regensburg last week, and his weekend apologies. Were they really apologies? Some people say yes, some people say no, but some Muslims are quite satisfied. We've got some audio, open lines, audio for you a little bit later in the program saying, oh, sure, this suffices. The Pope has retracted his statements. And yet, at least according to NPR News, this really isn't a retraction. Uwe Simonetto is a regular guest. He's director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and the Concordia Center for Faith and Journalism. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Uwe, welcome back.
Good to be back.
Well, I guess the first question is, after the weekend the Pope has had, probably not one of his best weekends, has he really apologized or retracted his statements in his Regensburg University address about Islam?
I don't think he's retracted anything, and he certainly hasn't apologized. What he has done is he voiced regret over the consequences of his remarks. But his remarks, as you know, were part of a very scholarly discourse at the university where he's simply quoted a 14th century emperor.
And what exactly in that quotation seems to have sparked the reaction from Muslims worldwide?
Well, the truth, alas, that's what it did, because the emperor back in the 14th century, that was the Eastern Roman Emperor, said, what good has come of Muhammad? Not very much. And then he pointed at Muhammad's incitement to violence, spreading the faith with a sword, and the Pope just simply cited this quotation. And then, of course, the whole Muslim world broke into exactly what the Pope had said, namely violence. Murdering a nun, burning down churches, and you have it. So, I mean, proving the point.
So was the, regardless of whether Pope Benedict intended to link violence and Islam together, was he right to do so? Yeah. Objectively speaking, is there a case to be made for the connection between Islam and not only violent progress of the faith, but also violence in general?
Yes, objectively speaking, there is, because while at first Muhammad, like the New Testament, abhorred violence or cautioned against violence, later he very much preached violence, which is what we're experiencing now, which is where they're heading. Now, the interesting thing taught us this. Suddenly people are beginning to wake up, because as a consequence of what the Pope said, if you read articles in the European media, including left liberal media, is suddenly they are reciting proof of that violence, and they're giving you, I have in front of me a 10-page article in a Swiss newspaper reciting the violence committed against Christian communities under Muslim rule back in the Moorish days after the conquest of Spain, when they fell into France and the whole Mediterranean region, even the northern Mediterranean region, slaughtering of civilian population, slaughtering men and women. All of a sudden, people are beginning to wake up and say, oh, wait a minute, we've been duped since the Enlightenment, when they said how nice it was under Islam, when the reality was quite different. Islam in Europe brought violence, death, and destruction.
So what does this mean? You point out that the left, especially the journalistic left in Europe, has had this apparent epiphany about Islam, and they're reacting in favor of the Pope's comments. What does that mean? I hardly would have expected a reaction like that from the European left.
Well, it was actually already in the works, but it needed to be triggered. I mean, you could see, if you follow the European press, I'm not talking about the hard left, but they are inconsequential anyway. I'm talking about your left-wing liberal media that used to be quite goofy about these things. And all of a sudden they realize, wait a minute, here's a guy, started with the cartoons and the crisis over the Danish cartoons. Wait a minute, these guys want to tell us that we cannot actually quote anybody, that we cannot actually recite the truth, that we cannot make historical references. And then in their reaction, they actually prove people right. And it is it was fascinating reading. I read over the last weekend newspapers from England, France, Italy, Germany, Holland, Switzerland. And they all came to the same conclusion. Hey, wait a minute. We're about to lose something that is very dear to us and to which we owe our own rights to express our views. And so therefore, I think that what the Pope has done in a scholarly fashion is very, very, very significant. And I'm actually quite glad it happened that way, even though, of course, I regret the deaths that that occurred, because suddenly people are waking up.
Is this a change of direction for Pope Benedict XVI from his predecessor, Pope John Paul II, who people are, the critics of the Pope, are remembering John Paul II as this, maybe through rose-colored glasses, this great preacher of peace between Christians and Muslims and the great peacemaker between the two. But is it a change of direction?
Oh, clearly, yes. It's clearly a change of direction. The current pope, who was, of course, as you know, the last pope's closest advisor and friend, was much more hard-nosed about the extent to which one can dialogue with Islam. I mean, he is very well read on Islam, and he's very well read on church history, and he knows what a danger it is, and he also is desperately worried that we might lose the Christian Europe the way the Christian Eastern Mediterranean and North Africa had been lost, again, because of the goofiness of the churches, because if they had stuck together at the time, we wouldn't have this problem now.
What does Europe do with Muslims by the millions in the major countries of Western Europe? What does Europe do, especially given the fact that every time even someone insinuates or cites history about the violent history of Islam, there are these violent reactions?
Well, what does Europe do? I mean, you can't or kick them out. Those, of course, who are committing violent acts can now be expelled, unless they are citizens, and then you have to do something else. As you know, there have been attempts on European trains in Germany, attempts to blow up commuter trains. Thank God German intelligence services were warned by the Lebanese intelligence, by the way, of these things. You had similar occurrences in other parts of Europe, England in particular. What Europe can do, what Europe must do, and that seems to be in the works now, is to reconsider their own faith and their own and their own Christian roots. And then their own Christian roots, if they come back to that, then they have to know how to react to this. And this is not by committing violence against the Muslims, but by preaching the gospel to them. And now people will say, Simonetto, you're out of your mind. Well, maybe I am, but the thing is that that the Muslims in Europe do have an Achilles heel, and that's their women. And the way they treat them, the way they slaughter them, murder them if they engage in Western European culture. 50 so-called honor murders recently in the recent years in Germany, for example. If you reach out to them, and if you do it subtly and well, and you live up to your own faith, then you have indeed an opening here. They are not on terra firma, the Muslims in Europe, because of the way they treat their women and because of the attractiveness of the Christian faith to Muslim women and to these very badly treated Muslim women.
The Pope is scheduled to visit Turkey soon, and he's basically been cordoned off in his residence outside of Rome for the weekend under very, very tight security. They say doubled and tripled security of both his own security forces and the local Italian police are helping him out there. Will he be able to visit that Muslim country safely after this last week's events?
Well, the Turks will make absolutely sure, if they let him in, but the Turks will make absolutely sure not much is going to happen to him. Although his life, he knows it, he said so, his life is in danger. Al-Qaeda is inciting suicide bombers to attack him directly. We know all these things, but of course there is protection. But you can never be totally safe. I mean, I would not be, I'd be horrified if he were killed, and I'd be very saddened because I have a very high respect for that man, but I wouldn't be surprised.
It would be funny if it weren't so sad to see, you mentioned the Al-Qaeda calls for the life of the Pope, basically putting a price on his head without formally doing that, and maybe someone this will be doing this soon. The Pope says, look, Islam has progressed through the use of the sword. And the reaction on the part of at least the Al-Qaeda version and the more radical versions of Islam is to say, well, we're going to kill the guy. Or we're going to do him harm. And you said before, this simply proves Benedict's point. How significant will this event be, if it can wake up the left, the soft left in Europe, in changing American public opinion, which seems to be, as expressed by our president until just about a year ago, Islam is a religion of peace?
Yeah, well, I hope the president has reconsidered that. As you know, I'm not a fierce critic of many of his politics, but on that score, he is just dead wrong. Reaction is it's time for Americans to wake up to the fact that they have this crisis. That doesn't mean they should go out and slaughter Muslims by no means. I mean, they also have to reach out to Muslims, but they also have to preach the gospel to them. But they should be aware that this danger exists and stop being goofy about it. I mean, you know, remember when 9/11 happened, the next thing you knew was every American congregation was opening their gates to the Muslims to make sure, don't think that we consider you guys murderers. Of course you're not murderers. Of course most of them are not murderers. But their religion, or the way it's been taught and the way a considerable part of the Quran reads, has murderous inclinations and murderous instructions. And if you go through church history and if you go through the destruction, systematic destruction of Christian congregations, Christian churches throughout the Mediterranean world and in Asia Minor, you know what happens. I mean, this is true.
Do you think the killing of this nun and her bodyguard over the weekend that we read about, do you think it was directly connected to the Pope's remarks and the reaction there?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, of course. It followed immediately an incitement by a local imam. Although other leaders in Somalia had cautioned the Muslim population against violence. One has to say that. But, they were being incited. And listen. Just before coming here, I checked Al Jazeera, which you can get on the internet. They are running a sort of cartoon version, a little sort of cartoon film, you know. And what they show is they show Pope John Paul II throwing doves into the air. And then here comes Pope Benedict XVI with a gun shooting down the doves. And then, you know, the sort of marching music, of course, the guy is German, you know, how else would you expect Germans to act? That sort of stuff, it goes around the world. I mean, they're burning German flags now, in mind you, now we've joined the crowd. I mean, Americans have been through this for a long time, now we're experiencing it. They're burning German flags, but what these fools don't seem to realize is that the more they behave like idiots, the more people know that they are idiots, and dangerous idiots to boot. And so basically, with every one of those acts, they are forging Western culture together. I think there are very, very few people left now in Western Europe who have illusions about the peacefulness of the Islam as a religion.
What's the, if Europeans know their own history, they certainly need to be concerned, because the progress of Islam in the Middle Ages, in the late Middle Ages, in the period of the Reformation Renaissance, was all the way to the gates of Vienna.
Right.
We're talking about Central Europe there.
Yeah.
And if what I've been told as the host of this program by many a guest is true, that Islam tends to, radical Islam tends to say, look, if we ever occupied any square inch of territory, it belongs to us, it's ours to take right. back. Should they be concerned? Should Western Europe be concerned?
Oh, absolutely. You know, here's a very interesting thing, Todd, that's going to happen. I know this because in my family I have a Bulgarian, a young Bulgarian lady who is married to my nephew. And she will tell you something quite interesting. You know, her country has been under Muslim control for, Turkish control for 500 years. If you travel through Bulgaria, you see churches that are no taller, whose spires are no taller than a horseman and a horse. Because that's as much as they were allowed to be above ground. Of course, they have huge churches underground. Mm-hmm. But trust me, when you talk to her about Turks, and they have 13% Muslims in their country, then you hear totally different stories. Or talk to the Austrians today. Talk to the Hungarians, all of whom have experienced Islam, and they will not engage in the goofiness that that we experience here in the United States, or have experienced in parts of Western Europe, where you know, the Battle of Poitiers has long been forgotten, you know. But if it hadn't happened in the 8th century, we would all be Muslims by now.
The call that comes from Western Muslims, in particular organizations that advocate for Muslim causes here in the United States, has been to a person, whether it's CARE or any other American yeah. organization of Muslims, is, look, what we need is less invective from people like Benedict XVI and more open, honest dialogue between the West and Islam. Now, that sounds great. Is that possible?
Well, you can dialogue until the cows come home, but, I mean, the fact is they're not changing their minds. I mean, Benedict, I'm quite sure, who is a very elegant, has a very elegant mind, but he didn't say this flippantly when he mentioned these things, that no, there is a different approach to religion, and theirs is one of violence, and theirs is one that will not end their campaign until they've won. And so therefore we should stop kidding ourselves and should prepare ourselves, and I think we should prepare ourselves mentally, we should prepare ourselves prayerfully, and we should instruct ourselves in history. And when we see that things are going in the wrong direction, we have to change course.
The consensus of, as it appears to me, I might be wrong in this, but the consensus of the American press is, well, the Pope was acting on bad advice from his advisors, or somehow this quotation slipped into, or he was blinded by the fact that he was addressing this in an intellectual forum and he thought it wouldn't have the impact it had. And people are asking, well, who's advising the Pope on what he says in his speeches? Do you think Pope Benedict XVI knew exactly what he was saying when he made that speech in Regensburg?
He knew precisely what he was saying, and he didn't need any advice on church history and on philosophy when he was addressing in a philosophical manner the philosophic department of University of Regensburg, which is his alma mater.
Do you think he's surprised? You can't speak for him, obviously, but in your opinion, do you think he's surprised by the reaction?
No, he's a wise old owl. He must have known what was going on, sure. I don't think he's surprised. I mean, he would still say, and I'm quite sure he did say that, he meant to say, well, I'm sorry this had these terrible reactions, but I think there was nothing flippant about that.
Well, before we let you go, you've got a major event coming up at Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis. They're going to be hosting a conference this fall. Tell us about this conference called to Engage the Postmodern World, the Lutheran Voice in Contemporary America.
Yeah, well, this is a two-day conference in which major scholars, really heavy-duty scholars from various traditions, will appeal to Lutherans to stop snoozing and wake up and engage the world. I mean, the first one is going to be Mark Knoll, the magnificent historian who already said, has been saying for dozens of years, that in Luther's voice you hear unusual resonances of the voice of God. And he will address this conference as first, and it will be, of course, that Lutheran, that we need a Lutheran perspective on politics and Christianity. And then there will be others, Harold O.J. Brown, one of the co-leaders of the initiative Christian Evangelicals and Catholics Together, will address the question, where is Luther now that we need him? A Roman Catholic who used to be Lutheran will appeal for a joint Lutheran and Catholic approach to postmodern chaos. And it goes, and then, of course, we have our own theologians here from this campus who will, one, for example, Bob Robert Rosine, will talk of the need to plant an apple tree, to use this apocryphal statement allegedly by Luther. So it is going to be very exciting indeed.
I don't know if you mentioned him already, but the editor-in-chief of Christianity Today will also be one of the speakers there. Last night on our nationally syndicated edition of Issues, Etc., we talked with one of his employees, Mark Galley, who's one of the editors for Christianity
Managing
Today.
Editor, yeah.
And he... we were talking about Luther's theology of the cross and Christian suffering because he had written a book on sentimentalized Christianity. And I had explained Luther's theology of the cross, which I am sure he is familiar with in other contexts. And he opined after my comment that he wished that these kind of Lutheran insights, like the theology of the cross, the place of suffering in the Christian life, had more influence in American evangelicalism. It sounds as though evangelicals are just now seeing the bankruptcy of some of their direction in the past and turning to something more substantive to the 16th century Lutheran Reformation.
Well, they're clamoring for it. They are very, I mean, this is what David Neff, is, who is this, Mark Galley's boss, he's the editor-in-chief of the Christianity Today group, will be one of the respondents. He will respond to this. Yes. The more you talk to learned evangelical theologians, the more they say, yes, there's something, we've been missing something here, and we need it from the Lutherans. And would the Lutherans please give it to us? I mean, it's not their fault. It is the fault of the Lutherans. They've been sitting on their hands and on their mouth.
You can find out more about Call to Engage the Postmodern World, the Lutheran Voice in Contemporary America, this conference coming up. In, is it February or November?
November. 3 and 4 here.
November 3rd and 4th here on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click links, and you'll find a direct link to our guest for this half hour, Uwe Simonetto, and the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. The website address again, issuesetc.org, click links. Uwe's a regular guest. He's an international journalist and director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and the Concordia Center for Faith and Journalism. Uwe, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
Well, when we come back from this break, I'm going to stay on this subject, and I want your reaction during some more audio open lines. What do you think of the Pope's comments made last week in his address at the University of Regensburg, and what do you think of the reaction to them, and then to the Pope's apologies, if you want to call them apologies? He's sorry that people reacted this way. I want your answer to that question after this.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers.
Okay, good.
You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The divorce rate among Christians is virtually identical with that of non-Christians. The majority of Christian as well as non-Christian singles indulge in sex outside of marriage. Many Christians, including pastors, are addicted to pornography. Living together and homosexuality are now socially acceptable. How can the Christian sexual ethic be recovered? How can the church move beyond merely denouncing sin to bring to bear the gospel of Christ on these issues? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin inviting you to attend a Christian Vision for Love and Marriage Conference, September the 18th through the 20th, on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. You can find out more at our website, issuesetc.org, or by calling Concordia Theological Seminary, 260-452-2204. A Christian Vision for Love and Marriage Conference, September the 18th through the 20th, in Fort Wayne, Indiana, 260-452-2204.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. ABC's hit show The View recently filled their empty seat at the table with a controversial pick, Rosie O'Donnell. And it didn't take long for viewers to figure out why the word controversial often precedes her name. Last week, the outspoken lesbian equated Christianity with radical Islam, an analogy that befuddled millions of viewers and even her co-hosts. Here's Jessica Stallings.
The newest face at the View table, Rosie O'Donnell, didn't censor her bias after a co-host concluded that militant Islam poses a threat to free people.
And if you take radical Islam and you want to talk about what's going on there, you have
and just
you
one second,
have to...
radical Christianity is just as threatening as radical Islam in a country like America.
When Esther Fleece, a devout fan of the show, heard the comment, she was repulsed by O'Donnell and the clapping that followed.
I'm appalled that she would not only communicate that, but that the audience would back up a statement like that. That is just absurd.
The comment followed shortly after O'Donnell read from President Bush's 9/11 speech, shocking even her co-hosts.
We're not bombing ourselves here in the country.
No, we are bombing innocent people in other countries. True or false?
But Christians are not threatening to kill us.
Comparing Christians to the terrorists who hijacked jets and crashed them into the Twin Towers reflects a growing movement of bias against evangelicals, according to Dr. Janice Krauss with Concerned Women for America.
I think Rosie's statement was very professional. I think it was ill-advised, and I think American people ought to be outraged. She ought to be fired summarily for making a statement like that. Can you imagine if she said something horrible that was racist? She'd be out of there in a blink of an eye.
No apologies from O'Donnell or ABC. For Family News in Focus, I'm Jessica Stallings.
O'Donnell insists America wasn't attacked by a nation, so any military reprisal against a nation is illegal. She also
underwriting on AM 850 KFUO provided by Reliable Heating and Cooling. Christian people who understand the value of bringing you God's Word on the radio. The folks at Reliable also know how important it is to have your furnace checked before winter. An inefficient or deteriorating heat exchanger costs you needless expense and could be dangerous. A preseason inspection from Reliable is convenient, affordable, and gives you peace of mind. Reliable Heating and Cooling, supporting the broadcast ministry of AM 850 KFUO.
Our Issues Etc. book of the month for September is actually a CD and a booklet. It's titled Listening to Luther. For more information, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website, issuesetc.org. The CD contains a recording of Luther's Small Catechism and hymns by Martin Luther. The booklet contains a history of the Small Catechism and several of Martin Luther's hymns, including the text. Listening to Luther, our Issues Etc. book of the month.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Well, for the next half hour, we've got audio open lines. Uwe got us started here with his reaction to the Pope's statements last week on Islam and the Pope's subsequent apologies, although Uwe says not really apologies so much. They are, in fact, simply expressions of regret at the reaction that has come to the Pope's statements about Islam. I've got a story from National Public Radio to play for you here, kind of tie the whole story together, bring it up to date as of today, and it tends to give us a broad survey of the reactions across the world in the Islamic communities. And then I want to know from you, do you think the Pope did the right thing in simply citing history to connect violence with the progress of Islam and violence with the day-to-day practice of Islam? Do you think he was right to even express regret at the reaction? I don't think it qualifies as a retraction of his statements, but what do you make of the Pope's statements of last week and the reaction over the weekend? It's audio open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You can also email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's wrap up the story here and bring all the details together from National Public Radio. Nearly a week after Pope Benedict XVI made his remarks that were seen as hostile to Islam, there's been very little let-up in the anger and protests among Muslims around the globe. Here's the story from National Public Radio.
Nearly a week after Pope Benedict made remarks seen as hostile to Islam, there's been no let-up in the anger and protests among Muslims across the globe. Yesterday, the Pope said he was deeply sorry for having caused offense when he quoted a 14th century text that describes some of the teachings of Islam as evil and inhuman in an address last Tuesday in Germany. NPR's Silvia Pagioli is in Rome. She joins us now. Sylvia, religious and political leaders throughout the Muslim world have been demanding a papal apology. Did they get that yet?
Well, his exact words were, "I am deeply sorry for the reactions to a few passages of my speech considered offensive to the sensibility of Muslims." He insisted his words were misinterpreted and that the real sense of his speech was an invitation to frank and sincere dialogue with great mutual respect. In an interview today, the Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone, said that the Pope's words had been heavily manipulated. And he ordered Vatican ambassadors in Muslim countries to illustrate and explain to religious and political leaders there the original text of the speech, which also said that violence is not rational and therefore is incompatible with the nature of God. To most analysts, the Pope's words did not mean he has backed down. And Muslim reaction has been mixed. The Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt first said it was a sufficient apology, then later backtracked and said it wants a clear apology. In Turkey, one minister said being sorry and apologizing are two different things, but the head of the country's Directorate for Religious Affairs welcomed the clarification. Iran followed Morocco's lead and called back its ambassador to the Vatican in a sign of protest. A total of 7 churches were set on fire in the West Bank, and the Vatican is very concerned that the killing of an Italian nun in Somalia could be linked to the uproar because it came right after a Somali cleric had condemned the Pope's speech.
How is all this likely to affect Catholic-Muslim relations in the future?
It's too early to say, especially because Benedict's approach to the dialogue with Islam differs from John Paul II. Benedict does not want interfaith encounters with Muslims because he does not put Catholicism and Islam on an equal footing. He's concerned about Europe losing its Christian identity both to secularism and to the arrival of Muslim immigrants. He's interested primarily in what the Vatican calls a cultural and political dialogue with Islam and in reciprocity, which means religious freedom for Christians in Muslim countries. Vatican officials often cite the example of Saudi Arabia, where churches are banned, or the case of Turkey, where recently several priests have been killed.
And what's the reaction there in Europe, Sylvia?
Well, several Muslim organizations here expressed relief, and analysts point out that there were no street protests by Muslims in Europe against the Pope. What I think is interesting is that editorial comment in several left-leaning European papers has tilted toward the Pope. Britain's The Guardian said there cannot be dialogue without rigor and openness, and added that the Muslim world should also take pains to be thoughtful in its response and perhaps less quick to take offense. And the French paper Le Monde appealed to Muslim moderates, who it said are also victims of extremism, to speak out clearly against fundamentalism and violence. Otherwise, the paper said, the Christian-Muslim dialogue won't go anywhere.
All right, thanks so much, Sylvia.
Thank you.
NPR Silvio Poggioli in Rome.
All right, there's a story from National Public Radio. My goodness, who needs National Public Radio when we've got Uwe Simonetto in the studio? I think he pretty much covered all the bases there. One-man news agency, I think we could call him here. Well, so what's your reaction to the Pope's statements last week about Islam? He simply cited this 14th-century document written by a 14th-century emperor that said, look, by way of contribution, what Islam has wrought is not been good in the realm of human affairs. What good it had, it may have taken from other religions, and what is unique to Islam has not been beneficial to mankind. And, of course, the reaction has been, as one might expect, violent at first. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's hear from you on Pope Benedict XVI's remarks last week and the fallout. Let's start with Bill, who calls from his car. Hi, Bill.
Afternoon. First of all, I don't think the Pope did anything wrong by saying what he did, especially since he was merely quoting an historical document. But I wanted to comment on the reaction that followed. We see these things on the news. Okay, here's a Muslim group in Indonesia or wherever, and they're rioting and burning and shoving their fists in the air. And by looking at them, they seem to be a group of what is politically correctly called underprivileged people. In other words, the poor, okay? And it seems to me that these people are incited easily to violence, not so much of their religious fervor, but more of an excuse to let off steam. And I know it may sound uncharitable, but it seems to me that these people, the ones actually doing the violence, are what Lenin would have called useful idiots.
All right, Bill, thank you very much. He echoes the sentiment of a New York Times reporter I heard interviewed not too long ago on violence. This was after the Muslim cartoon, or the cartoons about Muhammad with the bomb in his turban. And Friedman is the last name. What's Friedman's first name?
Thomas
Friedman. There we go. Thomas Friedman wrote an editorial at the time saying, look, we're watching people who see themselves every day falling farther and farther behind the West. We're watching people who feel the desperation of a people who cannot advance and watch the West that they consider to be corrupt advancing ahead of them. This is frustration at work, and it takes very little to set it off. I think there's quite a bit to that, at least in terms of the sociological explanation, although I don't know that you can divorce religion from it. What about the rest of you? Do you agree or disagree with Pope Benedict's remarks about Islam last week? It's audio open lines this Monday, the 18th of September, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Sandy in Alton is up next. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Your guest Ube Sivinetto. Wonderful topic, and his expertise and intelligent conversation is just, you know, it's inspiring to really learn more about what's going on. If this disturbs some of the listeners, I would recommend, in a disturbing sense, but it's a very good sense, to seek out Patrick Buchanan's State of Emergency. What I believe the Pope has done, I think we owe a debt of gratitude because he is sounding an alarm. I think he did it knowingly his life would be threatened. There would be repercussions. We're seeing old Europe die. I've got a few quotations in the book that Pat Buchanan, I have it before me, in fact, talking about they're calling Britain has Lundistan. It's now the most linguistically diverse city in the world. Your guest referred to what had happened in Paris just a short year ago on 194. It's just a recount of the Paris riots in Rouen, Lille, Marseille, Toulouse, Dijon, Bordeaux. I mean, 300 other cities, buses torched. Actually, there's a statement here on page 206. He said, welcome to Eurabia. 20 million Muslims reside there and are the fastest growing minority.
Sandy, thank you very much for the call. Now, laying aside Patrick Buchanan's concerns, it is reflective, of course, of those who are watching what's going on in Europe, and we're talking about the Islamization of Western Europe. That's no secret, obviously no secret. It appears as though, at least if the Pope is a barometer of that, that Europe is waking up to its predicament when it comes to indigenous Islam. Do you share the concerns? Should more church leaders follow the Pope's lead? If the Pope did the right thing or did nothing wrong in making these statements about Islam, is it time for others to say, you know, Pope Benedict was right. There is a connection between Islam and violence. Lael's calling from her car. Hi, Lael.
Hi, Todd. I just had a couple of thoughts. You know, it is, the way they reacted is really proof of what the Pope said anyway. I mean, aren't they reacting violently? And not that all Muslims are that way. I'm not sure why the Pope put so much emphasis on that, or you had to use that to emphasize, you know, a faith issue. I kind of came into it in the middle of this, so those are just my two thoughts. I don't quite understand that.
All right, Lael, thank you very much. What the Pope was doing, first of all, he was speaking to the philosophy department, if you will, of a university in Regensburg, Germany. He was speaking to them as a fellow intellectual, and he was simply saying, here is a concern expressed by a 14th century emperor about Islam and violence. And for what it's worth, this should be instructive to us in the 21st century that violence and religion do not go together. Now, he didn't go so far as to say when it comes to Islam, violence and religion do go together. But, of course, the reaction seems to indicate or might lend some credence to someone who is of that opinion. Here's DB calling from his car. Hi, DB.
Hey, Todd. I think that his remarks are really telling of the problem in Western culture, and that includes the United States, is that throughout this whole war on terror that we've watched over the last few years, there's been a refusal by Western culture to deal with the religious factor. I mean, some conservative groups deal with it to some degree, but this is an Islamic issue, and it has to be dealt with as such. And I'm afraid that a lot of, you know, things President Bush has done, I really agree with. But I think there's been a hesitancy on his part, and I know it's a diplomatic issue, but there's been a hesitancy on his part and the part of our government to deal with the issue of Islam. And until we do, we're not going to make any progress in this whole situation.
Thank you very much, DB. Well, the president was a couple of years ago talking about Islam being a religion of peace. There has apparently been some move because as of only a couple months ago, he openly used the word Islamic fascism, and he really did catch the tail end of an awful lot of flack for that. Although he hasn't used it again, maybe they're starting to wake up to the religious factor in these ongoing conflicts. Andy's up next. He calls from his from Kirkwood. Hi, Andy. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Todd. Have to agree 100% with that emperor from the 14th century, and of course it wasn't too long after that before Islam overran Byzantine Empire, and now all of Turkey is Islamic except for a few Christian pockets, I suppose. The Pope should not apologize for having said what he said. He has apparently apologized for having been the people having taken offense at it, but that's not really an apology. That's just saying, I'm sorry you feel that way. The thing that occurs to me when we watch the reaction is to compare that to the reaction that we get when Republicans and Democrats in this country are hurling things at each other. It's scary to see that while it doesn't reach the level of violence, that it's kind of headed in that direction. There isn't any real dialogue. It's just a very intense reaction. And I have to wonder if we're kind of going down the path without realizing it.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I draw a parallel between the two, Andy, although it's hard to argue that we do not live in very polarized, the term of art is polarized. It's hard to argue that we don't live in very polarized times, but you don't have to go very far back, even in American history, to find equally, if not more polarized times. The late 60s come to mind, very, very polarized times. Maybe there's a parallel. All right, let's hear from some of our internet listeners on Pope Benedict's remarks about Islam. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. I want to hear from you. You can email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's Jerry calling from South County. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah. Hi, Todd. Well, I think the Pope was right on. He chose the perfect quote for what he wanted to say. But he also added, I understand, according to today's paper, the Pope said in Italian, according to the official English language, these were in fact quotations from a medieval text which do not in any way express my personal thought. So I'd like to know what his personal thought is on the matter, and then maybe we can clear everything up.
All right, Jerry, thank you very much. That's been what's been reported over the weekend. It doesn't express his personal thoughts. Although, when I heard that, I thought to myself, Jerry, what difference does it make what the Pope personally thinks? I mean, he can hold any number of personal opinions. The question is, when it comes to someone like the Pope, the role that he occupies not only in Christendom, but especially in the Roman Catholic Church, what he personally believes is irrelevant. One hopes that it's in concert with the official teaching of his church. I think he was simply making an observation. Now, that only highlights the issue here, Jerry, doesn't it? Here is someone saying, look, let's just make a historical observation about Islam and violence in the past. That's all it is. And the reaction is as though he were making a universally applicable statement about all of Islam throughout all of time, and that he was expressing his own personal opinion when he said, as you point out, that he wasn't. I don't know if it's going to help to know what Benedict XVI really thinks. I seriously doubt, just like George W. Bush, I seriously doubt we'll ever know what any of these men really think. They simply don't say it. Roland's calling from his car. Hi, Roland.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. I've got a question for you. Put your theological thinking cap on. Is it ever, taking into context that we can agree that the Muslims really don't mean any good for the Christians, and that it's in their scope of theology to say, you know, fewer Christians are the better. Is it ever appropriate, is it ever good for the church to come together as the church, but then turn around and say, you know, perhaps, what I'm thinking about is, if we don't learn the lessons from medieval times, the only response we will have to this threat is of medieval proportions. And is it ever appropriate for the church to say, pick up your sword and go?
But what do you mean by that? Oh, Roland's gone. Okay. If it means it's time to defend ourselves for the church to say, as it would have done in the medieval times, it's now time to defend ourselves, let's remember the church occupied a very different role in society in medieval times. They could, the Pope actually could say, pick up your sword, and he had men with swords who were at his disposal. The Pope had his own territories and his own armies. He was defending his own territory when he was defending Vienna. The Pope no longer has any armies. He can't call armies to war. That simply doesn't exist anymore. My question is, should other church leaders join the Pope? That's what I find remarkable here. The Pope steps up there last week, kind of sticks his neck out, as he's, it's part of his job, sticks his neck out, makes a statement about Islam. He bears the full brunt of the reaction, and meanwhile, other church leaders, I'm thinking about Rowan Williams in Anglicanism, we're talking about the big ones, Protestant leaders here in the United States, as far as I can tell, are conspicuously silent. They don't condemn what the Pope had to say. They don't support what the Pope had to say. What would it have meant if some of them would have stood up and said, you know, I think Pope Benedict has a point here? Well, let's hear from some Muslims on Pope Benedict's remark. Ibrahim Hooper is the director of the Council on American Islamic Relations. He says that Muslims need to see a straightforward apology, not simply an expression of regret at reaction from the Pope.
His statement caused great offense, and I think he needs to mitigate the damage caused to interfaith dialogue by his remarks.
Now, these were remarks made over the weekend, in fact, yesterday by Ibrahim Hooper, before the last of the third apologies issued by the Pope on Sunday afternoon. Ibrahim Hooper of the Council on American Islamic Relations also says that Pope Benedict's speech made last week seemed to indicate that Islam is inherently violent.
This is one of the misperceptions about Islam that's often put forward by anti-Muslim bigots, and it was unfortunate to see the Pope repeating it.
Well, that's interesting, because he wasn't making the statement. The Pope was not making the statement as part of his personal opinion. In order for it to be a bigoted opinion, it would have to be his own personal opinion. He was making an historical observation. Here again, Ibrahim Hooper, he says that anti-Muslim rhetoric may in fact be fueling an increase in discrimination complaints from Muslims.
This is one of the misperceptions about Islam that's often put forward by anti-Muslim bigots, and it's...
All right, we had a little trouble there with our audio. We will get it straightened out here in just a second. It's audio open lines. Your reaction to the Pope's comments, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Comments made last week by Pope Benedict XVI. On Islam and violence. When I heard them, believe it or not, we actually talked about this on Thursday. There was a little piece we played, and it did not spark any kind of reaction in me. If you will go back and listen to the audio from Thursday last week, we played the news story on the Pope's comments before all the reaction occurred, and I simply said, I think my comments were, well, here's a Pope who is an intellectual successor to Pope John Paul II. And he's made some rather rational statements there, it sounds like. I had no big reaction to it. I go home, then Friday, all heck breaks loose in the Islamic world in reaction to these things, and I said, man, I really miscalculated how people would react to the Pope's comments. Here again is Ibrahim Hooper, he's spokesman for the Council on American Islamic Relations. Speaking at a news conference today, he says that the Pope Benedict's comments about Islam and Muhammad last week were inaccurate, and they were also divisive.
We're seeing just a flood of hate rhetoric on the internet and also on talk radio.
Well, there's no surprise about that. Ever since the term of art Islamofascism or Islamic fascism was uttered by our president, I'm sure that Ibrahim Hooper is going to hear that as hate rhetoric. It depends on what you mean by hate rhetoric. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address. I do want to hear from those of you who can email us. issuesetc@kfuo.org. issuesetc@kfuo.org. From St. Charles, here's Dave. Hi, Dave. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. Since you're soliciting comments, et cetera, I thought I'd leave a couple. One is, I think the reaction to the Pope's quoting of another person as proving the point of the quote, first thing. And then also I heard the report today that the nun that was killed forgave her people, the people who were killing her. So that is two poignant points, I think, that I would just throw out.
All right, Dave, thank you very much. After listening to the news over the weekend, I thought to myself, has anything changed from the 14th century? Here's an emperor observing that there is a violent streak in Islam of his day. The Pope makes these comments, quoting the emperor, and we see the violent streak again. Has anything changed? Not much. Here's an email from Eric in Olathe, Kansas. He writes, do you think our inability in the West to call a spade with regard to Orthodox Islam is related to our cultural opinion of religion? I'm thinking specifically of how you describe Jesus as something like an accessory for your suburban life in a recent show. Do Americans not just not understand how serious Muslims are about Islam? That's a very insightful observation, Eric. It really is. Yes, American Christians tend to say, how could the Muslims take their religion so seriously? After all, we don't take ours that seriously. That's one of the biggest criticisms that Muslims worldwide have of Christians, that they don't take their religion seriously. Here's Don calling from his car. Don, welcome to Issues, Etc.
How you doing?
Doing well.
I work with an Islamic gentleman, and I think the thing that struck me the most is how genuinely embarrassed he is with folks that actually out in protest and burn things. And he moved here from Pakistan and is pretty Americanized, but as your last caller just made the point, he is more devout of an Islamic person than I have to say that I am a Christian, praying five times a day and going to the mosque. But there is a group within their culture that is very embarrassed by this behavior and seeks to be more westernized and more tolerant. So I don't think we can judge every single one by the actions of a few.
Don, thank you very much. There's no doubt that westernized Muslims, whether it's under the influence of American or Western culture, feel a great amount of embarrassment, although I must say I didn't hear them reflected in the comments of Ibrahim Hooper. I didn't hear embarrassment there. I heard defensiveness there. But it's encouraging to hear that there are Muslims in America, like your friend there, Don, who are embarrassed by the reaction. Do they have the courage to speak out, to channel their embarrassment into an actual statement? Not just to the Western media, because we'll hear all sorts of people going on the news here in the Western media saying, we're embarrassed by these reactions, burning the Pope in effigy, no, that should never happen, burning American flags, burning German flags in the streets of Europe, that should never happen. We'll hear that in the Western media, but will they have the courage to speak out to the Arabic media like Al Jazeera and say, no, this should not happen? When we come back from this break, Hour 3 of Issues, Etc., Jackie Winship of Missourians Against Human Cloning joins us.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.